The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 29th of August, 2019. On the podcast today, Stephen Williams, co-CEO of Rehoboth Resources, RBD, discusses their West Newton project, in which initial analysis suggests a significant oil and gas discovery. Also on the podcast, Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals, talks about their royalty agreement with Orion Mine Finance, which includes an upfront cash payment of $25 million. Also on the podcast, David Ciclatira, chairman of Live Company Group, explains their agreement with Imagine Exhibitions in the US. And Jacqueline Danielle, chief executive officer of Way Education, WEY, ticker there, talks about their very positive, recently released trading update and provides a general progress update for the company. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, if you do receive an RNS via the app and you like it, hit that thumbs up button and it will feature on the front page of Vox. And also, of course, I'll read out in the podcast.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stephen Williams, co-chief executive officer of Rehoboth Resources, RBD, ticker there. Stephen, thanks for joining me.
Great to be here, Justin. Thank you.
Well, share price is firmly in positive territory upon the operational update you've released on West Newton and further good news of that. And we'll dig into that in a bit. Before we do, as always, if someone is listening right now, Stephen, I've never heard of you, Rehoboth, could you just explain what you're all about, please?
Yeah, sure. So we created the Rehoboth strategy a little under 2 years ago with a very specific idea in mind. And that was to provide funding for other operators' appraisal wells. So we identified a situation that was existing in the oil and gas industry where we saw good quality projects that were in the pre-cash flow stage of their life cycle, and they'd become stranded due to a lack of capital throughout the industry interested in that sort of project. And we saw, well, we've got, you know, good projects, good teams, good technical teams associated with them, that we can enter very low valuations because they're stranded and there's no one else providing that capital. We can provide the funding to drill the key appraisal well that should create a lot of value quite quickly within those projects. And that obviously should result in very strong and relatively quick returns for our shareholders.
Yeah.
So we kicked that off just under 2 years ago. We've invested in a number of projects. We've drilled a number of wells now, a very active strategy. And on the whole, we've had success throughout that drilling program. And most recently, as you mentioned, at West Newton, which we provided an update on today. And that's a key example of the sort of thing we're trying to do within this strategy, where we found a project that had a very good technical team. They drilled a very encouraging first well back in 2014 and then didn't have the funding to take it forward. So we were a part of a funding solution that drilled that well, or re-drilled into that field just recently, and we're seeing phenomenal success there.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the initial readout. I think was it in June, I think. How far back?
Yeah, June was the first.
Yeah. And now you've had obviously more analysis, more evaluation here. So what do you know now, and why is the share price rising so quickly? Explain the significance of what you found out so far.
Yeah, so, you know, the based on the first exploration well, which again was drilled in 2014, you know, long before our involvement, the indications were that this was primarily a gas field. Mm-hmm. And so we went in to drill the appraisal well expecting to find predominantly gas. When we made the announcement in June, we were able, very pleased to be able to announce that we'd made another discovery, that we found a very thick pay zone, or what we thought would be a very thick pay zone. So it was all very positive. And interestingly, we'd seen indications of quite a significant liquids component within that, what we thought was that gas reservoir. Mm-hmm. What's changed over the testing period and all the data analysis that goes on with these things, you know, it takes weeks of work to continue to refine your understanding of an asset like this, is it has now become apparent that this is primarily an oil field. So we've got a big, thick section of pay, very good pay, strong porosities, so everything you want to see in the field. But the majority of this is oil with a gas cap on the top. So we announced today it's a 45-meter oil column with a smaller gas column above that. So, I mean, that's a really, really significant oil column. This is something the likes of which hasn't been seen on shore in the UK since Winch Farm all those decades ago, anything of this kind of scale. We're not able to put an updated volume around that yet. The volumetrics we had been talking about were based on the CPR, which came out a few years ago, which was based on that first well in 2014. So that will get updated as soon as possible. But I think it would suffice to say we're very, very happy with the size of that oil column that we've got. And the aerial extent of this field is really extensive too. We have plenty of evidence of that from the seismic coverage that we've got, very good quality seismic. So we can see the size of the field. We know how thick it is. We now know it's an oil project. And that is extremely exciting, both for Rheobald and I think actually for the UK onshore oil and gas industry as a whole, where you don't typically get things of this kind of scale.
Yeah, well, you said exactly. I mean, the significance of this. I mean, you mentioned there Witch Farm, of course, was hugely significant, a big find there. And so you're putting it in that league, are you?
Yeah, I mean, we can't say what the volume number is going to be when the CPR comes out. I'm not saying it's the size of Witch Farm. I'm just saying that since Witch Farm, there hasn't been anything anywhere near that kind of scale. Yeah. And I think this is probably going to be the next biggest oil field that we found on shore in the UK. And it is very, very significant. I mean, this could well be a successful offshore asset. It's of that scale. This could be a highly economic offshore project. When you find something like that onshore, where obviously it's much easier and cheaper to extract the resource, then the value of it can be really outstanding.
Yeah, cool. So this revised CPR that's coming. Any idea how long that will take?
Not exactly. It's very early days. I mean, the data is coming out at us, daily. And it's a very dynamic process trying to understand these things. So all of this will be fed into the independent CPR, but of course you need to have the full data set available, and then it takes the independent assessment some time to get done as well. So we don't have a time frame on that yet, but clearly we're keen to get that done as soon as possible, because we're very confident that'll be a very positive outcome when we get to see that.
Absolutely. Okay, well, one final thing. As always, Stephen, the three reasons, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing and the progress you're making here, but are not yet following the story, obviously it's not too late here because we still don't know the full potential here and you've got other projects going on, but so they want to hit that follow button. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, sure. I guess number one is, as you mentioned, we're still very early days in this project. There's a long way to go and a lot more value to get out of this. And that will become apparent consistently over time. There's more analysis to be done. There's more testing to be done on this well. There's the updated CPR. And then we hope to be drilling again as soon as possible. We have permits to drill another two wells on this field from a different site. And we will be moving on with that as soon as possible as well. So a lot more to come from this real, premier asset that we've got in the UK. And secondly, we don't want this news to kind of swamp and get in and sort of obstruct the other key news we've had this week, which was success in our first well in Romania. So Romania is another really exciting project with a lot of running room, lots of potential to drill lots of wells and get a really good business running in Romania. And we drilled the first well, it's drilling now, but we made an announcement that we've got a discovery in Romania. We found very encouraging signs so far in that well. And that's really exciting too. So we've got that project that's really just starting to get to that liftoff stage at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then number three is we have a lot of other stuff in this portfolio as well. So that whole strategy that I talked about at the start is based on building a portfolio of diversified appraisal opportunities. We've had significant success in California where we're already producing oil and gas out of successful wells drilled there. We've got a UK offshore portfolio, which is also moving forwards. And we continue to see other opportunities that we could bring into this company as well. So, this is clearly, West Newton is becoming a sort of focus asset because it's been so successful with the drill bit so far. But, the Rheobald story continues way beyond that. And there's an awful lot more to go for.
Marvellous stuff. And like you said, lots going on, so no doubt we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much, Stephen.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals. That's HZM ticker. Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Good to speak to you again.
Yeah, God, your share price is up. I saw it at one point, it was up 100% today. And, I mean, at the moment, it's just around about 40%. But out of the gate, it went like crazy. And good reason for that. So there's a, you've got, well, you know, RNS today says $25 million royalty agreement with Orion Mine Finance. And we'll dig into that. But I assume now you've got a lot more followers because you are on the front page of Vox as one of the most followed. So people are just jumping on here. So if someone's just jumped on and followed you, but don't know the story, just give them a quick summary, Jeremy. Horizonte, what's it about, please?
Yeah, absolutely. We are an AIM-listed nickel development company focused in Brazil. We've got two 100% owned assets, the Araguaia Ferronickel project, which is the royalty transaction that we talked about, or we'll talk about later on. That is moving through to being construction ready in Q2 next year. And we have a second project within trucking distance of Araguaia called the Vermelho Nickel Cobalt Project, which we currently have a pre-feasibility study running on. So we effectively can provide investors with direct exposure to nickel for either the stainless market or the EV battery market.
Marvellous stuff. A major step forward today with Orion providing sort of finance here by a royalty, $25 million. Explain that for people and the details of it. First of all, the top line, what does that mean, royalty finance? How does that work?
Yeah, so effectively a royalty is a future percentage of production from the mine. Mm-hmm. And as we outlined earlier in the year, we're working on the project finance package. We're working with Endeavour Financial. The aim is that we will have that complete by Q2 next year so we can start construction. But we outlined that we were looking at royalty financing options. We ran a process. We had a number of interested groups, and we were successful with Orion. So they've effectively paid $25 million in cash up front for a 2.25% royalty. It's only on Araguaia, and it's on a set amount of nickel. And I think the key thing for shareholders is it's non-dilutive. So we're not issuing equity at low levels. This is a project-level finance piece.
Yeah, exactly. And so what's next here? I mean, where do you take this now? What's the next big milestone? Because the share price has obviously taken off today, but where do you go from here?
Well, I think one of the key things is obviously closing off the complete finance package. This is a small portion of that total raise. But we see this as the main catalyst and really demonstrating to the market that this project is real and it's going to be constructed. And it's worth talking about Orion because they are one of the largest private equity mining specialist groups out there today. They've got $5 billion under management. And this has the potential to be sort of stage one of a multi-stage funding package with Orion. So in terms of where we go, obviously this funding will be used to advance the project. It will bring in the owner's team. It will allow us to do the basic and detailed engineering, acquire land, and really move the project ready to get machines on site at the end of Q2 next year. So it is a big step. And in parallel with that, we have a number of work streams around the project on the final pieces for the permitting and actually moving towards being able to place orders for equipment, etc. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah, and as far as nickel concerned, it's been a bit buoyant of late, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think we've obviously been selling the virtues of nickel for the last 2 to 3 years. We believe in the fundamentals, and I think there are 3 or 4 key fundamentals that really stand nickel out from a lot of the other metals. Number one is obviously metal inventory. So what does that mean? That's metal on the London Stock Exchange and the Shanghai Futures Exchange. We're now drawn down to the lowest level we've seen in the last 6 years, and we're going to see that continue to draw down. The demand side is robust. It's running at around 5% a year, principally driven by stainless steel and then that new massive EV battery driver. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, because nickel has been so depressed price-wise for the last sort of 10 years, there's been very limited capital has flowed into the next generation of projects, which means on the supply side, there are very few projects that are ready to come online in the short term. And that's really where we have such a niche position that Araguaia will be able to fill and drop into that curve.
Marvellous stuff. Okay. As always, Jeremy, if someone's listening to this right now and they've seen the, you know, because a lot of people just look at the big rise of the day and then start following, you know. But So if someone's seen that big rise and they like what they've seen here with this $25 million funding package on royalty, just give them three quick reasons why anyone who's not following right now should hit that follow button on your page on Vox, please.
Number one, the asset quality. The two assets that we have are tier one assets, i.e. they're lowest cost, highest grade assets out there in their class. Number two, we have got a strong shareholder base led by Teck, Glencore, JP Morgan. So you've got a strong institution and corporate shareholder base. And finally, number three, we're well funded. This royalty, together with cash on account today, will bring that over 30 million. So we're well funded. And lastly, very strong fundamentals behind the nickel market. So you've got some pretty powerful pieces coming together in this story.
Marvellous stuff, Jeremy. Good to chat to you as always. And no doubt we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Ciclatera, chairman of Live Company Group, LVCG. David, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
So quickly, after, a couple of days ago we spoke, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2 days ago.
That's right. You did an excellent trading update, operation update, where you were beating targets. I mean, you know, not even 6% through the year, but you're hitting those end year targets already. Some more news out today on a sort of partnership with Imagine Exhibition. So, David, take us into that. What's it all about?
Well, as I think I told you when we spoke on Tuesday, our zoo program is obviously very attractive to zoos in America. There are over 400 zoos, and there's obviously aquaria, there's obviously museums, well-funded museums in the United States. We've had such interest, and if you remember, next week in New Orleans is the association. We've been invited to go down there, and frankly, we needed to partner up with somebody who could deal with the amount of work that's going to come out of this. And so Imagine Exhibitions are a very well-known group of people. Their culture is very similar to ourselves, and the contract is simply for the touring assets. So the exhibitions remain separately. We have a partnership in America with that, so the sort of Dallas Cowboys thing, that sort of stuff is carrying on with the Live Nation activity that we started last year.
Yeah, okay. And ideally, David, what would you like to see happen here? What's the outcome of this collaboration, this partnership? What would be the ideal?
Well, I think what's going to happen, if I predict, say in 12 months' time, if we were talking about this in 12 months' time, I think there will be a lot of orders. I think it'll copy what's happened in Europe, but in a much bigger way. And I think that you'll find that there'll be a very full order book, not just for the year 2020, but well beyond 21, 22. I think that we currently have one Animal Paradise set of assets out there that's in the, we talked about the Boston Zoo, it's in Chicago at the moment. Reality is we're going to have a series of assets. So there'll be a Brachiosaurus set out there. I'm sure there'll be BrickLive Ocean, there'll be BrickLive Space. I think there'll be lots of different assets that are being sold. And I think what's interesting is, without going into the specific amount of money that each one of these is rented for, if you can imagine having three or four touring sets sold out every year in the United States, you're talking millions of dollars. So I think it's very exciting. I think that the reality is all these people talk to each other. Many of them are charities, like they are in the UK. The reaction they've had from in Chicago has been hugely successful for the zoo concerned. So you just know that you're going to get a very full order book. It's obviously building the brand. I think that's very important as well, that everything is obviously BrickLive. It's building what we're about. The Imagine Exhibition folk, they have a very good operations team, which means that we don't have to keep sending people over to America to unload and whatever it is. So it's a cost saver in that respect as well. But it's just exciting. I started this, 2 years ago. I've always thought that America is going to be the biggest part of this business. And I think we will be launching, we plan to launch a whole series of exhibitions in the early part of next year, which will include a revisit to Dallas and stuff. We're working on that now. And I just think we're just going to do a huge amount of good. And you should also remember that the contract's not just for United States, it's for Canada. So, you know, Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, they're all cities that have got museums and zoos. So I am really excited about this particular project.
Yeah, and their track record stacks up very well, doesn't it? Looking at the figures here, I mean, they've done more than 50 unique exhibitions in 10-year history, reaching 20 million people globally. And they've done 155 venues across 92 cities in 23 countries. So they're the right outfit, aren't they?
They are, and their culture is different. I first ran into Tom, who's their sort of owner, key figure, maybe 5 or 6 years ago in Singapore. He's a very clever operator. He has a very good team. The team is already working. We're marketing everything together next week. They're good people, and they know what they're talking about, and they're good sales-oriented people, good operational people, and they're very excited too. And you can see from his quote in the release. So I really genuinely believe that when you look at the profile of this company 2020 onwards, we talked about the zoo program at the beginning of the year. We raised additional funds, if you remember, so that we would be able to build that zoo program. It's performed beyond our wildest hopes, I think, and I think we'll continue to do so. I think the next step for me is, obviously, we talked about this on Tuesday, is the IP area, and we're extremely excited there as well about the relationship with Nickelodeon. And as I said to you, there's a lot of stuff coming out of this company, and the news flow is going to continue to grow. So it's not been a quiet summer.
No, I'm sure shareholders are glad of that. But I'm just looking at the brands that have been associated with Imogen exhibitions, and they're strong brands, aren't they? They've got Angry Birds, you've got Hunger Games, you've got Jurassic World, Downton Abbey. So you're in good stock there.
Yeah, I think that he's what's impressive for me is that he came, although I've known the guy for some time, he really came to us because once he understood what we were doing with the zoos, and I think for him, the simple thing was our product can be put outside or inside. And obviously the having product that can go outside is crucial when you're talking to outside spaces. But America's such a big place. I mean, his operation, his warehouse, everything is based in Atlanta, which is obviously a central point within America. But I think really I would be very surprised if in a year's time I'm not on your podcast going, do you remember we talked a year ago about doing this? We've overperformed in the United States. I'm absolutely convinced that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest, they're big fans of entertainment like that, outdoor entertainment, and it's the home of it, really. So yeah, it's perfect setting for your company.
I was always shocked by the quantity and the quality of merchandise in the United States around sporting venues. And I think that this is an area which, again, as you build the shows, as you build the stuff, we will develop. The only thing is, I think, is I guess really the what we've got to do with this company is we are obviously all about the profits of the business, which is frankly, as you know, we're on target, and we're hitting our event numbers well in advance. I think that we talked about this earlier. We haven't really worried about our share price or where we are, because we are confident in where we're going, and we're seriously, we've got lots of things in the pipeline. So I feel that this is a major announcement, and I feel that for those who are shareholders in the company, as a message to them all, be patient. I certainly believe that the price of the company is a good price right now, in terms of, it's obviously, I hate to use the word cheap, but it is a something that I'm sure is going to increase.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. And one other thing you mentioned, you've got a brand new website at the moment.
Yeah. We've updated the website, livecompanygroup.com, which I hope the various shareholders and people will find useful. There's a newsletter section. There's all of these things there. But, you know, this is a global business now, and I've been sitting – this will be a question for shareholders to think about. I've been sitting the last couple of days with a potential partner from yet another part of the world. So we continue to grow.
Marvellous stuff. Dave, good to chat to you. And like you say, lots of news coming out, so no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
We'll be catching up sooner than you can believe.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me now on the podcast is Jacqueline Danielle, Chief Executive Officer of Way Education. Ticker there is W-E-Y. Jacqueline, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, but a couple of people say, when are you going to get these guys on? Because, you know, I know you very well. And in fact, I interviewed David Massey back in the day, so a while back. But, of course, yes. You're now refocused. And before we go any further, you've released a trading update that's very positive. For people not aware of what Way Education is about, can you give a brief summary as to the business, please, Jen?
Yeah, of course. So Way Education is the company that owns and operates Inter High School and Academy 21. And for those people who don't know who they are, they are both entities that deliver in real time, live, fully interactive education. They are completely different entities in some ways. So Inter High School is a full school experience for students. So just like you would get in your car or get in the bus, school bus, and go to school every day, these children log into Inter High School. Mm-hmm. And it starts from junior school, so before pre-age 11, right through secondary school, so right through the year groups, taking GCSEs, and then on to sixth form, where you can take A-levels and other courses. So it's a full school experience. They study all the subjects they need to do. There's all sorts of areas. There's lessons and homework and exams, and there's things like social areas, everything that you would find in school. We haven't managed to do an online canteen yet, but I'm sure that day will come.
Yeah, well, school dinner's not the best anyway. So.
Yes. And we also have big classrooms where we have assembly type master classes, where we have guest speakers come in from industry, from government, from overseas. Of course, we're all very keen to come and talk to them because they can do it from wherever they are. And it's highly interactive. Academy 21 is slightly different in that that has been designed specifically for more vulnerable learners, and it supports state schools and local authorities in the UK and other organisations, things like PRUs, and it supports them in delivering education to those children who are a bit more vulnerable. So children who are perhaps a bit behind with their learning and they need to get some outcomes, they need to get some GCSEs, so we deliver what we call rescue packages to them. And then there are children who, for all sorts of reasons, can't attend school or don't or won't attend school, and so we help with that. And then there are children who've been excluded for behaviour, and we deliver what's called six-day provision. So we help schools. They remain registered with the physical school, but we deliver the education on their behalf. Mm-hmm. So those two entities are very, very different, and they're aimed at different parts of the market. But in lots of ways as well, they're very similar. I mean, they share the same learning platform. They have the same staff. And for both of them, it's about the learning progress and the data which gives the sort of meaningful and relevant evidence of that progress that they're making that they wouldn't be without us.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And the thing is, you are the founder of both these core areas. And so what can I ask you, I mean, just a quick, you know, question. So what, obviously there's massive potential now because everything's moving online, and it's even education. But when you set these up, what was your thoughts there? Why did you set them up then originally?
Well, originally, Inter High School was set up first, way back in the day. We started building it at the end of 2003, beginning of 2004. And that time, we could already spot a need. Basically, what we saw happening was that children in school, if it didn't suit them in any way whatsoever, and it could be something really, really small. I mean, you know, the children who were high performing, who weren't really getting challenged. Schools have stopped accelerating pupils now for all sorts of reasons. So, you know, some of these children were feeling a bit unchallenged. For whatever reason, if they were kind of turned off, for most parents, there were very little choices. What can they do? If they've got reasonable incomes, they can whip them out and try and find a better independent school. That's not the case for many families, especially if they've got, you know, more than one child. Those I think the average independent school fees at the moment, something like £17,000. That's an awful lot of money if you've got 2, 3, 4 children. Mm-hmm. So they were stuck. And so we sought to provide an alternative for those children who weren't making the progress that they should be making in school. And that was the initial thought behind it. It was the rollout of broadband in South Wales at the time. Mm-hmm. Super Janet back in the day had come, which was a network for education and schools, so that was being rolled out. But we had children, you know, in the early days, we had children dialing up on the old dial-up system. Wow. So it was very resilient and could work that way. So even then, we knew that there was going to be a huge demand. And of course, since that time, we've seen increase every single term since the beginning of 2005, ever since.
Yeah, well, that brings up a date now. Let's go to the training update. So you released this training update, very positive. Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Jacqueline.
Yeah, well, I'm really pleased with where we are. It reflects the strong growth that we've always had in both of those entities. And, you know, that's just continuing, which obviously I'm pleased about. I'm particularly pleased because it's a reflection of how we can still achieve that growth, and we have year on year, even though we were forced through tragic circumstances to have a sudden refocus on our overseas territories and how we'll be going to deliver our services into them. Okay, and we managed to sustain the level of growth through that refocus. So I think that is very pleasing. The company sustains itself. We grow revenue, as I say, year on year. The company is profitable. We're cash generative. It's really straightforward and clear. To me, and hopefully it is to everybody else too.
Yeah, well, just to go over the figures there, you reckon for the full year it'll exceed £6 million in revenue, and a year-on-year increase in that revenue of 43%. Say cash generative, your valuation at the moment is around about £13 million. And so going forward, I mean, how big is this market? What's the potential here? Because I think some people, after the refocus, and when you pulled away from China, you still opened those markets, of course, but you don't have operations
of there. Of course, yes.
I think people thought, well, hang on, that's the blue sky opportunity gone. But what's your feeling on it? Is there still lots of growth to be had in this area?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no limit to this growth. In fact, why I think it was a very sensible focus to pull entities out of other territories at this stage is because there is plenty more growth to be had. And also you run the risk then of not getting it right. Growing too quickly, too soon, could really be catastrophic. We're talking about education here. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about, you know, just producing a mass product. This is education. Apart from health, I would say it's probably the closest thing to people's heart. Mm-hmm. It's something very serious. You at the centre of our service is a child, is the future, our young people, and you've got to get it right. And that quality is, if you're going to sustain the growth, which we are and have been doing, you've got to get that quality. You've got to be delivering outcomes for those children who are using your service. Otherwise, there's no point. We might as well all pack up and go home. Yes, we could grow very quickly, but we've got to grow with that quality as well. The market has no limit. I feel very strongly about this, as you mentioned. I'm quite proud to be the founder of both entities. And there is no doubt in my mind that there is no going back here. This sector isn't going to stop growing. Technology is expanding, exponentially. And as long as it's used for the benefit of the young person, then we are going to grow with that.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, I do find it a bit, I've got two children and we take them to school, and I do find it a little bit outmoded, even if it's not all online. You think the resources of everyone taking their kids to school at the same time, all sitting in the same classrooms, it's like it hasn't moved on, but every other aspect of our life has gone online, And so, going forward, what's your vision here? What do you want to happen? What can you practically see happening?
I can see happening that learning online won't be unusual. It's not in the States. In the States, 1 in 3 students learns online. It's not unusual. They're far ahead. It started off in all sorts of sectors, but it's grown. In this country, it's still fairly unusual. That will drop off. It will become more and more mainstream to do this. Even if it's not entirely online, we know that a lot more students are really benefiting from a blended approach. So some of their lessons might be in a physical classroom and some of them might be in a virtual classroom. So there, like I said earlier, there is no limit to this. I agree, else I wouldn't be in this business, that education hasn't moved on, hasn't changed since the very early days in its principles, the way it's delivered. And that is fairly archaic. And we know from all the data and all the research that every single child is different and learns in a different kind of way. But your traditional school can't possibly manage that situation because they've got a fairly large number of pupils all in the same place at the same time learning the same types of things. And that's pretty archaic, and technology means that we don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. And as far as competition is concerned in the UK market, I mean, you're the only one I know, so pretty much I think listed on AIM. But what is competition like in this area?
It's growing, and we want it to grow. It's bound to, because the demand is growing, and the demand is growing at quite a pace. And I can tell you that governments are looking at the growth in that demand, in the growth in that market, and obviously recognise that they need to do something about it. Specifically, the Department for Education in the UK are looking quite closely at this now. And without trying to tease you too much, I will be giving you some more news about that in the next academic year.
I like that tease. Marvellous stuff. But I see Barry, Barry, chairman here, is very confident. He says that the board is confident in Way's future growth. So you reckon you, because you have been growing, like you say, year on year, but you reckon you can continue to grow like this?
Absolutely. Yes, without a doubt.
Yeah, okay.
The growth, the sector is not going to stop growing, basically. We know that the home educators, I think it was a 42% increase in families choosing to home educate their children. Those aren't families that are choosing that as a life child choice like they once did. Those are families who are dealing with children who have become disengaged in school, who are not making the learning progress that they should or could be making, and so they take that decision. Schools themselves recognise that every pupil is different and that they need to adapt their learning for all of those pupils, and they are looking for solutions, and we are helping them with those. That's not going away at all. It's just going to get bigger and bigger.
Do you know what? I think still think with, I remember a time when people said they would never do banking online, you know? And now the banks are shut everywhere. It's like, I don't want to go into a bank. I don't want to, you know, whisper to someone behind a window and people stand next to me what I want to do. But, oddly, with my school, it's you know, my kids' school, the communication between teachers and parents is still very much old-fashioned. You've got to teachers and parents evening and all that stuff, is talk, bits of paper and all this stuff. But I assume with online, it's a lot more sort of rigorous, isn't it? You can look at things a lot more. Like, what, your kids' progress would be a lot more analytic, you know?
It can be a lot more analytic, and it's in real time. So you're seeing, the teacher is seeing instantly what the child is doing and how it's performing. We have so much data that they can see, an adaptive learning test. So there's all sorts of tools at their disposal that they can use, all sorts of interactive activities that they can see in real time how every child or groups of children are performing and what they need to be doing to enhance that performance.
Marvellous. Okay, on the Daily Podcast, Jackie, I highlight top five most followed companies, and you can see the top 10 actually on the front page of Vox. And in fact, you were on there yesterday after the news. So, and people, you know, are liking the sound of what you're doing here, but are not yet following the story. Could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please?
Yeah, sure. So the first one is the benefits of online learning are obvious. The accessibility, the ability to go to school from wherever you are in the world, is huge. That benefit is huge. You can be anywhere, you can be traveling, you don't have to be separated from your parents if they travel, you don't have to be separated from your family, you can be absolutely anywhere. There's no need now to pay more for your holidays because you're forced to go in school holiday time. There's no need to miss school ever because you don't need that time away. Children in hospital are even logging in. So the benefits of online learning are absolutely huge. Mm-hmm. The flexibility of it is immense. So you probably remember, I certainly remember with my children, they had to choose options from lists. So at a very young age, my son wasn't able to study German because it didn't fit in with his options. So these decisions are being made for young people and doors closing far too soon. The flexibility of our learning platform means that they can pretty much study whatever they want. Obviously, there are only a certain number of days in the week and weeks in the year, and there might be some timetable clashes. But generally speaking, the flexibility allows them to study absolutely anything. So that's the first thing. Just look at some of the benefits of online learning. Okay. The second thing I've already touched on, this sector is not going to stop growing. It's going to get bigger and bigger. Look globally. Look at the countries who are turning more to online learning, who international schools who can't recruit and retain the top quality teachers for all sorts of reasons. So the sector is not going to stop growing. Mm-hmm. The third reason is a little bit different. We are not about growth for growth's sake. There are thousands of children who benefit from what we do. And that's the reason that we promote all of this growth. And I'll give you an example, just one very small example from last week. This year, and I've got this figure written down, 580,850 young people entered GCSEs. Out of that number, only 78 of them achieved 7 level 9s. Now, level 9 to you and I is A++, okay? As you know, they're in numbers now. 78 out of 580,000. One of those 78 was an inter-high student who is studying with us from Southwest China. I think that's all you really need to know. The benefits of our growth are huge.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Jacqueline, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
OK, time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Nostrum, oil and gas, NOG is ticker there, down 6.8% at the moment. Union Jack Oil, up 5.2%. UJO, some good news out with them. Hopefully we'll get David Bramall, Executive Chairman, on the podcast very soon. At three, Argo Mining. That's ARB, ticker there, of course. Bitcoin took a bit of a tumble overnight. It's gone from over $10,000 down to $9,500 at the moment. So they suffered, of course, highly leveraged to the blockchain, or the Bitcoin price, I should say. At two, Horizonte Minerals, up 33%. I chat to Jeremy in the podcast, of course. Good news of the day. And at number one, it went up crazy yesterday, Matomi Media Group. That's MTMY is the ticker there. And top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Live Company Group, partnership with Imagine Exhibitions. Of course, I talked with David on the podcast. Dev Clever Holdings. At four, Contract. At three, Union Jack All, West Newton Update. At two, Rhea Bold Resources, operational update at West Newton, onshore UK. Of course, same with UJO. And number one most liked RNS came from Horizonte Minerals, £25 million, not pound, dollar, royalty agreement with Orion Mine Finance. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much was appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.